from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
America's favorite place to watch football is Stadium Swim, located at Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas. Catch all the biggest games at a viewing experience built for sports fans. Chill in one of their 6 pools on 3 different levels for a perfect view of their massive screen. Plenty of seating options from cozy daybeds to private, temperature-controlled cabanas. Stadium Swim. Book your spot today at CircaLasVegas.com.
Now, it's Jeffrey Wright and Company.
Tell your story.
Live on Memphis' sports station, 92.9 FM, ESPN.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to Jeffrey Wright and Company. My name is Jeffrey Wright. You can follow me on Twitter, on X, at JWright929ESPN. As always, you can listen on 92.9 FM ESPN, 680 AM. But if you're away from the radio dial and you want to keep up with all of the shows here on 92.9 FM ESPN, you can do so by downloading the Odyssey app. It's free to download, free to listen, free to hear all the great Odyssey content from all around the country. Download it today and stay up to date with all that is happening here on 92.9 FM ESPN. Dennis Fuller's producing the program for us. Glad that he is with us. My company this week, one more time. He's the host of the Locked On Podcast Network. He's called College Hoops and Baseball for ESPN. He's on Twitter, on X, at Lennox on Baseball. Steve Lennox, good day, sir.
Good day. We've gotten to Friday. So let me ask you off the bat.
All right.
What is your Friday today compared to 3 weeks from now? How does the show change once football's underway?
So typically, well, I call high school games. So next week I've got my first high school game. We're back with high school football on Friday nights. I think I only have to travel once this year, so I've got to go to Chattanooga. I want to say it's like week 3, week 4, but usually what we do on Thursday is we used to do a thing called the tasting menu where I lay out what's going to be on the 4 TVs all weekend, starting with Thursday, then working into Friday, Saturday, Sunday. But really, this would be a day where you're kind of putting in all the rest of your bets for the rest of the weekend. That's pretty much what Friday would consist of making sure. Yeah, probably pretty much making sure that I'm on the right side of what I want to be on.
Are you in the fantasy sports world too? Are you doing your lineup Friday or are you waiting till Sunday morning?
So, I play fantasy football. I hate fantasy football, but it's a way. I'm in 2 leagues. One is how I keep up with my high school friends and the other is how I keep up with my college friends. And okay. I really think if there were a service that would break up with your fantasy football league, I think I would pay for that. Because once you start really gambling, it's there's nothing worse than thinking about your fantasy team while you're like going against something that you're betting on. Like you're on the Dolphins, but you're also you're on the Dolphins this week, but you need the Bills defense. You need the Bills defense to shut the Dolphins down. Like when you start having to fight against yourself, that just gets really annoying.
Okay.
But I mean,
how many years in that fantasy sports world? Do you have a streak going?
So I started the college league in 09. So what's that, 15 years? Yeah, I think that'd be 15 years. And then the high school league, I think we started 07. Like when we all went off to different colleges, like that was like, okay, how, here's how we're keeping up. And we're, I think that was 07. So 15, all 17. Right. That's kind of depressing to think. It doesn't feel like it's that long, but then you wake up, you're like, oh my God, it's been 15 years.
No, that's all right, though. I love the fact that you did it and the way you said it. You know, it's a way for you and your high school friends that stayed in touch. And then after college, that's how the next group able to stay together. I like that.
And then we had the Zoom. We now are doing the draft on Zoom. That's actually been fun because, well, this year's a little bit different because we actually had two buddies get married. So we're now at that point where everyone wants to go to all the weddings because we haven't seen each other in so long, and everyone's like, we don't know when we'll see each other again. So we've had those two, but I think we got the old college Zoom coming up next week, and that's always a fun one.
All right, so your wife just celebrated a birthday this week.
Indeed.
What month did you get married?
June.
June, okay.
June 27, 2020.
So 2020.
Yep.
Did you notice in that next football season, the fall of 2020, did you fall off? Was your game on, or did your game fall off? And are you expecting your two friends that got married this year, maybe this is not their year? Can you take advantage of them? Because their priorities are changing. You know their priorities
no,
are going to change.
So my football intake has not changed with getting married. It changed a little bit with the addition of the kid, but not a ton. It just basically what really changed was during the primetime games, I'd probably miss about 30 minutes. You know, you're having to turn the volume up really loud so that you can hear what's going on because you've got bath and bedtime. That's really the only thing. What has suffered in marriage is my golf game. Yeah, like I had to make the choice between would I rather. My wife doesn't really get all that mad if I'm around the house. Like if I'm sitting on the couch just watching TV, you would think like that would kind of bother her. She doesn't care as long as I'm there. I think she is not a big fan of like, if I go play Saturday and Sunday, and then she's with the kid by herself, that's when I can get away with one. You can get away with one round a weekend, but when you get to that second round, you start to get some looks and some questions and some you get a lot of noises that you just don't really want to hear.
So there's a JFK quote: "Show me a man with a good golf game, I'll show you a man neglecting something." So
yes.
Your golf game has suffered.
Yes. Yes. And the best my golf game was right when I moved back to Memphis. I was producing in the mornings. I was lead fill-in, but during the summer, almost every host was here. So I was playing, you know, my day was basically done at noon. And I mean, I think I got down to a four. It was awesome. There was
really?
There was nothing better than knowing I was going to show up to the golf course, and I was probably breaking 80 just about every time. But now, you know, now I'm at, you know, hovering around a 10. That shows you where it is.
There's that Vince McMahon meme where you're walking into the Monday morning office, and that's what you just pictured me as you're getting out of your car, getting your clubs ready, and going to the clubhouse. That's
yes.
you, right?
Yeah,
that was
no,
you?
No chance in hell. Yes, I had the Vince McMahon pimp strut. I guess the other thing, though, that I've always kind of... Both of my brothers are significantly more athletic than I am. And so there's one thing, it's like, no matter how good my golf game was, my middle brother was just better. Like, you know, he's nearly 6 inches taller. He's got probably 50, 60 pounds on me. He can legitimately hit it, you know, 330, 340 yards, and it's just kind of tough to ever feel good about yourself when you're playing with your brother and you just realize like the we're not even like the same person. It was a nice reminder though. It was a nice reminder from an early age, life is not fair.
Okay.
Yeah.
Life lessons.
He had a big arm, big arm, great athlete. And then my younger brother, while he's not that much bigger than I am, he ran a laser-timed 4.4. And that was another nice reminder of life's not fair.
But and you're the oldest?
I am the oldest. The oldest, but okay. I used to say I'm the oldest, but the smallest. But now I just would say the shortest because I'm not sure. Losing 10 becomes a lot harder post 30.
Yeah. Yes, it
does. Diet starts Monday. All right, let's tell everybody what we got coming up on the program. We'll do our usual. What are we going to be talking about on Monday? I want to take a look at some NFL things. Also, we got the FedEx St. Jude Championship going on, the first event of the FedEx Cup playoffs for the PGA Tour. Hideki Matsuyama is at 11 under, as is Denny McCarthy, who is doing it with a torn labrum. So shout out to Denny McCarthy. Sam Burns is a shot back. Scotty Scheffler's two back. A couple of things I want to discuss about that in just a moment, but also want to get to some NFL stuff as well. Blake Topmeyer is going to join us, as he does each and every Friday on the program. Blake has written a column about Hugh Freeze, and so I will indulge myself. I will discuss said column with Blake when he joins us in about 25 minutes or so. We'll get into the list. We had the Intuit Dome debut. Did not go well. We had a hero that said something about Noah Lyles. I want to discuss that as well. Nick Cage, perhaps, is John Madden. We'll discuss whether or not we like that. We'll talk about games of the weekend. We'll tell your story, and then we will get out of here. But before we get to the NFL, Steve, I was kind of having this thought before the show, and I'm curious to know. So up into your neck of the woods, what, you have the Travelers? Is that the... Because we don't have a regular Boston event anymore. There's no regular New York event. So really the Travelers is kind of the Northeast PGA Tour event, correct?
You got it, right. In Connecticut.
And the Travelers is actually one of the few success stories of the PGA Tour in which they never had a good field, never really had a great date on the calendar. They were not one of the tour's premier events, but they worked like hell to recruit big names, make it a first-class event. And really, it became kind of this, you know, really good. It was used as an example of, hey, even if you have a tournament that maybe doesn't have a ton of gas, like this is what you should do. And it was always, and I don't even think it was PR and lip service. Like I really think most people were like, yeah, they've really made that into a great event. But I was thinking as Denny McCarthy was rolling up the leaderboard, pun intended, guy rolls the rock. With all due respect to Denny, he seems like a world-class, like, nice guy, and he's from my former co-host hometown. Denny McCarthy's not really the name that you want to win your tournament, and, you know, like, to me, it's like, if this would have been the old FedEx St. Jude Classic, where, you know, we were just happy to get someone in the top 10, you know, back when the field was above the John Deere, but, you know, clearly one of the bottom 10 golf tournaments on the calendar. Denny McCarthy's cool for me to win. Because, like, okay, that's a life-changing win and whatnot. But ever since we've been elevated to a WGC, thank you, FedEx, and now a playoff event, you kind of always want the big name to win. Does that make me an idiot? Like, you know what I mean? Like, it doesn't affect me one way or the other. It has nothing to do with whether or not the tournament's coming back next year. But I just always feel like when you have a big event, you want it to be validated by having a big winner.
Is it a big winner on Sunday at the end of the final 18, or is it that you want a big name in there other than Denny McCarthy on Sunday?
I think it's I want a big winner.
You want a big winner?
Yeah. Because, I mean, the reality is, like, Denny McCarthy, now that they've got the setup where the top 70 from the FedEx Cup standings make it, you're not going to have, like, it's going to be pretty difficult to have a guy win where you go, who? But I would imagine the casuals out there have no idea who Denny McCarthy is.
You're conjuring up me thinking of Happy Gilmore and Vern Lundquist saying,
who the hell is Happy Gilmore? Do we think Vern's going to be in the new one?
What's that?
Do we think Vern's going to be in the new one?
There's another one. I did not know that there was.
It's in the works.
It's in the works.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, you know what? Adam Sandler is great. Remember Bob Barker was in our
Price is Wrong.
Adam
Bob.
Sandler is great in repeating roles and things like that. So it's certainly something that's going to be discussed, right? And if everyone comes together, then yeah, they figure out how to write it in for what, a 30-second scene?
Yeah, I mean, at some point,
yeah,
you have to.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, I mean, I would roar.
Oh, yeah.
If that happened. You know, I wouldn't want to know going into watching that he's part of it.
Agreed.
All of a sudden, boom, it's there. Right?
I've gotten to where now, if there's a movie coming out and I really do want to see it, I try to avoid even the trailers now. Because I feel like the trailers just give away the plot.
Tell you everything.
Yeah, it's 100%. Like 2 minutes and like, all right, here's the, so I even just try to avoid that, but I would hope to see Uncle Vern, but like you, I would try to avoid spoilers. But, you know, like, I was thinking about this, and it's like, what do I care whether or not Denny McCarthy wins? Like, we're still having the tournament here next year. It's going to be the same thing. It's not like the winner impacts anything about what it says about the tournament, but it's almost like, I think about this. I have a couple of college roommates I have one college roommate that's a member at LACC. And he was telling me when the scores were super low at the U.S. Open last year, he was like, I got to tell you, man, like, they've called a membership meeting. The members are pissed because, like, they didn't think it was going to play that easy, and the scores were low, and somehow they viewed it as like a, you know, like a statement on their golf course. No one cares from here, like TPC Southwind. Like, it's a tour event, so you're not trying to make it as hard as possible, whatnot. But I was thinking, like, why do I care who actually wins? Because it's not like I have money on it. It's not like I, you know, it doesn't really say anything about the tournament other than somebody played well for 4 days.
Right. And Shooter McGavin coming in and saying, correct, you know, you guys do a great job here year in and year out, and
first
I always
class.
Say leaving.
First class. First class. He is, I think, I hope you're sitting down for this. Chris McDonald did find time in his schedule. I think he's going to be in the new Happy Gilmore.
That's great. I always love him in movies. Again, you know, he may just pop up there, or you may know going in that he's in it. I've loved the roles that he's played over the years.
It's almost like he was put on this planet to play Shooter McGavin. And the other thing that I like about it is, oftentimes when actors get known for like one role, and in particular if it's like a comedy, it's not like it's an award-winning role, they're kind of bitter about it. He's like leaned into it. He's made it like his moniker, is like his entire persona. Like I actually really appreciate that. It's like when someone truly appreciates like their fame and what people know them for, I find that so much more endearing than, like, it makes me like a celebrity more.
Yes, he knows what's got his success. He knows how he's recognized and embracing it. Yeah. And a lot of them do not, that, you know, oh, I've been cast as this, you know, I think of Soprano guys. Now they've either, you know, marketed themselves well over the years and they've embraced it 100%, or it's like, I don't ever want to talk about this again. So on that, I'm a MASH guy. Alan Alda, Hawkeye Pierce, was in my parents' restaurant on the eastern end of Long Island many years ago. And I wasn't there. But MASH was a thing in our household. I would end dates to go home and watch MASH at 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock in high school. And girlfriend got wise to it at some point. But that became family appointment viewing for our family. So anyway, Alan Alda is in the restaurant. And I'm glad I wasn't there, because that had trickled down to my nephew, where he became a fan of the show. And my father, one of my parents went out to ask for an autograph and explaining, this is for my nephew. He's in the national, you know, he's doing all these different things. Alan Alda wouldn't sign the autograph. And then somebody else came to come up to talk to him about that character of Hawkeye Pierce, and he wouldn't do it.
Yeah, it's
And I don't know if he just got tired of it or whatever, or he just wanted to be a private person, but it was like, in that moment, your stock for me just went down.
Well, it's funny you mentioned that, because, you know, obviously going to Pepperdine in Malibu, you would see celebrities on the regular, and you'd have some good experiences, some, you know, it's like everything, some good, some bad, something, you know, some in between. Without a shadow of a doubt, the nicest and the most pleasant and authentic conversation I've ever had with a celebrity was with Adam Sandler. My girlfriend at the time worked at the frozen yogurt shop, and he brought his two daughters in, and, you know, I'm just hanging out waiting for her to finish work. He just sits down and he just like starts up a normal conversation, like, so Pepperdine. And he's like, so what's that cost a year? I'm like, well, it's like, you know, it depends on, you know, scholarship money and whatnot. You know, it's tuition itself. It's like room and board's 40. It's like $40,000. And I'm sitting there going, this guy's worth $250 million. And he's like, it's like he wouldn't even notice it if it were gone. But he was, could not have been nicer. Did the move where he remember, you know, introduced himself, remembered everybody's name. Like, it was wildly impressive. And it's one of those ones where even when people, like, make fun of Sandler movies and, oh, this is lowbrow kind of, it's like, I don't care. The guy was nice to me. Like, that's all I really care about. He seemed like a nice guy. If you don't like the movie, just don't watch it. Like, who cares?
Can I go 60 seconds here or less?
Absolutely.
So, Grown Ups, the first one. Peter Vesey, longtime NBA writer, mentor of mine. And Peter used to have a home on the eastern end of Long Island, then moved out there full time. But his son, Joseph, is now in that world out in Hollywood.
Good
and Joseph, if you Google Joseph Vesey, I used to babysit for him. And it was a payback to Peter Vesey for, you know, tickets to a Knicks game or sneakers or anything like that. And, you know, talking NBA, whatever. It was thank you. I'm going to help you and your wife out. I'm going to babysit Joseph while the wife and the daughter go horseback riding. And Joseph and I bonded, right? So Joseph is like, he's not an intern, but he's getting coffee and he's doing different things on the set of Grown Ups. So Sandler loves basketball.
Oh, yeah.
Joseph at one point was like, not on the And One Mix tour, but he was that guy.
If it were today, he would have a YouTube channel.
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, he had a handle, everything. So they're playing pickup basketball on that court that was in the movie. They're playing pickup when they're not shooting scenes. And Joseph is just working the court. And he's and this is from Peter secondhand, but it's like, okay, how much do I do here? Do I let up? Do I make people look bad? Do I do everything and just dominate out here where I know I can? So first game, second game, all of a sudden Adam Sandler goes, "Who's that guy?" And he goes, "Don't worry about it. He's on your team the rest of the way." Whoever the response
Smart.
Was like, "Don't worry about it. That's who he is, and we'll make sure that he's on your team the rest
Smart.
Of the way." And that's how they created a relationship. And Joseph has opened up for Adam Sandler, Rob Schneider, and David Spade over the years because of Adam Sandler. So that adds to your story of he is who he is. And, you know, you talk about running into these people and, oh, they didn't give you the time of the day. It might have just been their hour.
For sure.
Right? Not all of them. Some of them, they're just jerks. But Sandler is that guy. And I love hearing it. You had that conversation with him.
No, he was an all-time good guy.
Did I do that less than 60 seconds?
No, it was perfect. You also got me thinking, because we had mentioned this beforehand, so what are the other things we could be talking about on the weekend? So we've got more NFL preseason. Couple of, I guess, quarterback battles to be decided. We'll find out, I guess, the Raiders. Antonio Pierce says he wants to make a decision whether or not it's Gardner Minshew or Aiden O'Connell. As I always say, my AOC, Aiden O'Connell. Bo Nix is going to get the start for the Broncos. Russ is going to get the start for the Steelers. But none of that, you know what I mean? Like, okay, I mean, it feels like we're kind of talking about some quarterback battles for teams that we don't really feel like are going to be a part of the story. So you brought this up before the show, and I think it's worth exploring before we get to Blake. Fox has a primetime standalone preseason game on Sunday night. It is not going to be with the A team, best I can tell. So Brady's first game is still going to be the Browns Cowboys week one. That's still going to be his debut. It's the first time we'll hear him. Do we think he's going to be good?
I think the bar is set awfully high because the analysts who have elevated in the last couple of years have really set that bar. I mean, but he's Tom Brady. So what is going to be his niche? And how fast does he find it?
So,
you know, Romo is great at understanding what the next play is.
Romo,
what is Brady's niche for me?
Romo had the parlor trick of knowing formation and run pass. And so you had that parlor trick. But I also thought the thing that was interesting was, even when Romo came onto the scene and everyone's talking about him being a sensation, quietly what you would hear from TV people is, it's not about the first couple of years. It's going to be what happens the farther or the further and the further he gets away from his playing days, because he won't have the familiarity. He won't know the players, the schemes. Coaches will change, and he won't have the institutional knowledge. And so we've seen kind of Romo fall out of at least the public favor. I don't think he particularly cares. He seems to be doing just fine. If Brady is to be believed, his approach is going to be, he claims he wants to be for football what Johnny Miller was for golf, where kind of the tell it like it is guy. And I think if he actually does that, it's going to be interesting. He's going to be polarizing one way or the other, but I would also say, like, whatever, Tom Brady's always going to be polarizing. Like, he's Tom Brady. He's like, when you're that level of famous and you have a claim to the greatest player of all time, like, you're always, people are just going to have, they're going to feel a certain way about you. But the thing that I'm always curious about, the NFL does not like it when you do that. They want the game to be presented in a very National Football League positive way. And so I'd be curious to know if he gets tapped on the shoulder and gets told to knock it off. Or maybe he gets tapped on the shoulder and told to knock it off and he tells him to F off. And Fox, I think, is the perfect spot for that, because I don't think Fox is going to care.
They're going to let him do his thing.
Correct. I also think, though, it's a lot easier said than done. I think it's a lot easier to say you want to be tell it like it is guy, and then when the light goes on, you know what I mean? Like, it's kind of tough to be blunt. So I am curious. I think he's going to be good, because also, unlike Romo, who doesn't exactly strike me as... Tony Romo's always struck me as the guy that maybe got all B's because he'd show up, go to class. He's not the guy that, like, studied. He just went to class and he kind of got enough. Brady strikes me as, like, the guy that he's always going to do the homework. Like, he's going to over-prepare. So, I think overall, I think he's going to be good.
Forgive me for doing this. I did try to Google it so I could look smart or sound smart.
Mm-hmm.
Who's he working with?
Burkhart. So, he replaces Olsen. Olsen bumps down to the Fox B team.
I love Kevin Davis. Burkhart, but I think some of it's on the shoulders of Kevin Burkhart that from the get-go.
I agree.
You've got to make Tom Brady. Well, we know the analyst is the star, and Tom Brady is the star here. But Burkhart has to mesh with him from the get-go, from our side of it as the viewers. And that's as big a task as Kevin Burkhart has had since he's elevated to Fox. And his career has just taken off.
I think you can make the argument Burkhart's under more pressure than Brady is. Because if you're Burkhart and, like, using your wrestling metaphor, like going back to Vince, like, if you're Burkhart, your job is to put Tom Brady over. Your job is to make him shine. And if you can make him shine, you might have a gig for life. Like, realistically, you know, if you're just the pair. But if it doesn't go that well... Oh, boy. You're the guy that couldn't make it work with Tom Brady.
Right. And similar to what we were talking about with ESPN the other day, Burkhart has elevated and met and exceeded expectations everywhere they've put him.
Yep.
And so with that, you've got a great responsibility. You've got a great avenue here that, yeah, your career is set up for as long as you want to work going forward. And Brady will have a say in it, too. So you want to make sure Tom Brady is happy with your work.
Oh, I mean, it's almost
but
like...
But just of... Now this is a different lane altogether. It's okay to be the second on the second Fox game of the week and this game, but now you're in the number one. You're there. I have admiration for Kevin Burkhart. I believe that there is success ahead, more success. And this can be successful. But absolutely, it's more on him for this to be successful than Tom Brady, because Tom Brady can sit down... And that glow is going to be there every single week when he sits down in the booth.
You bring up an interesting point, though. What do you think Burkhart... What's Burkhart's agent telling him? Because it's like, you know, I think everyone in the room probably knows, hey, most important thing is we got to put Tom Brady over. But, like, I mean, what's the strategy? Lay out? Like, you know what I mean? Like, you don't want to do the move where you try to oversell, and you don't want to do the move where you come across as reserved. Like, the more and more I think about it, the more and more I'm like, man, that I'd like to have that pressure because I know what the paycheck is. But that is a different kind of pressure that you see in a world that doesn't really have that much pressure.
Like you said to me, hey, earlier today, we're talking sports.
Correct. We don't have real choice.
Right. It's you know, hey, whatever their percentage is, let's say, I'm going to do the math in my head real quick. 35% of the people are going to love Kevin Burkhardt and Tom Brady. 35% are not going to like the two. And then there's going to be that 30% where you've got to, you know, the undecided.
Yeah.
How do you bring those people over? For the agent, hey, this is what we've been working for. This is what we've had our eyes on. They believe in you. You believe in you. Don't screw it up.
Yeah, like, I'm just like,
you know, and also just, you know, it's that, you know, it's all about relationships. He's got, you know, him and does Tom Brady need Kevin Burkhardt?
No.
Yes and no. But Kevin Burkhardt needs Tom Brady. And if they can create a relationship and establish that, and as viewers, we're going to know that within the first couple of weeks. And everyone's going to want to grade him out and offer opinion after their first game together. It'll take a few weeks. How do we feel after week one, and how do we feel in the middle of October?
Yeah, I think that's right. All right, Steve, we will bring you back for hour number two. But when we come back, we'll talk with Blake Topmeyer. Let's talk some SEC football. We'll do that next right here on Jeffrey Wright & Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN.
From the mind of a two-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be. To be.
There's sports betting, and then there's Circa Las Vegas, an adults-only sports watching nirvana. Now you can watch up to 19 games at the world's largest sports book on a 78-million-pixel, three-story mega screen. Plus, it's always spectator season at America's largest pool amphitheater, Stadium Swim. Stadium Swim is open 365 days a year and features all sports on an epic 143-foot screen. Book your reservation at CircaLasVegas.com. Circa Las Vegas, this is sports the way it should be.
In life and recovery, every day is a little different. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips and support in others like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex Grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
Blake, I hate to do this to you. I hate to be a call-out guy, but listen, as much as I respect and admire your work, if we don't hold each other accountable, like we're doing each other a disservice. He wrote in your Hugh Freeze column that he's going to call plays, and that's just not true. Blake, he's only going to call the plays that work. That's what he takes credit for.
Yeah, well, you have the history with, mm-hmm. with Hugh. You know better than most how he operates. I thought Hugh was really dominating the headlines this week, as I wrote about his comments about Nick Saban. And I get it. He was asked on Marty and McGee about going up against Saban. But Hugh spent a lot of time talking about how he should have two more wins against Saban. And, you know, maybe that's true. He did have opportunities to win two additional games against Nick, particularly last year in the Iron Bowl. But the other side of that argument is, why did you blow those games? And the other thing I'm wondering is, like, why did a team that was that close to beating Alabama in the Iron Bowl lose by three touchdowns to New Mexico State? Like, Hugh Freeze has gotten a lot of run off of a couple good seasons at Ole Miss and two wins against Nick Saban. And there was a time when I think Hugh Freeze was one of the best coaches in college football, certainly one of the best offensive minds in college football. But when you look at it, his career peak now occurred almost a decade ago, and his two wins against Nick Saban occurred a decade ago. So, like, there needs to be a new headline on Hugh Freeze's resume, and it can't be anymore that he beat Nick Saban twice, because Saban's a retiree now. That doesn't get you very far when you're trying to make a living in the SEC in 2024. And I do think Auburn's better this year. Like, that's kind of the part buried in all this. I think they're better. I think the schedule has eased up a little bit, but I still wonder about their quarterback and offensive line situation.
Yeah, to me, also, you had a great line. Who could forget that? Not Freeze. That was tremendous. I laughed out loud reading that. No, maybe the other thing is, like, in one of those games that he counts as a close loss, which apparently is a win, yes, they were up 24-3. I covered that game. They also were down 18 in the fourth quarter in a game in which they were up 24-3.
Yeah, that's the one. I think it's really reasonable to say they should have won the Iron Bowl last
100%.
Year. It was fourth and 31. They should have won that game.
By the way, I also saw fourth and 25 that he allowed, or his defense allowed.
Was there a fourth and 25 in that game?
Oh, yeah. Not that game. When Ole Miss was playing Arkansas in 2015,
oh, okay.
Fourth and 25.
Okay.
That was the Alex Collins back to Hunter Henry throwback, right. Pitchy woo woo.
That's right. No, I thought you were talking about the Iron Bowl.
No.
Yeah, so he should have had one more against Nick. Two more, I don't know. I mean, they blew a big lead in that game, but like you said, like I think Alabama kind of won going away in the end. But again, I think the bigger point, and I understand he was asked directly about Nick, but the logical thing to say was probably, you know, he was a great coach. Loved our battles against him, but he's not coaching Alabama anymore. Got to worry about the new guy. But instead, he spent a lot of time really kind of puffing up his two wins against Saban and those other games where he gave Alabama some trouble. And again, I just think, like, that's not going to help you anymore, Hugh. You're not. It is true that I think Hugh Freeze gave Nick Saban more problems than the average coach.
Yeah, I agree.
But again, that can't be the headline on his resume anymore. Nor can seasons that happened at Ole Miss a decade ago be the headline on his resume. I mean, these next 2 years, as we know, are going to be critical for Hugh at Auburn. I mean, he's recruiting well. We'll see where they get at the finish line, but it's looking like a really strong class. I think his transfer additions at wide receiver are maybe one of the more under-discussed narratives in the SEC this year. Like, they added a couple of really talented guys at wide receiver, including the Penn State's top wide receiver from last year's name's escaping me, Keandre Lambert something
yeah.
or other. He was Penn State's best receiver last year, one of the best receivers in the Big Ten, which I understand Big Ten receivers are generally viewed differently than the SEC receivers, but he's a solid wide receiver. I think they did address some problems, but again, I go back to offensive line. I think it's an average offensive line. And quarterback, I think they're below average at that position. I just think it's really hard in today's SEC to be a frontline team if you're average on the offensive line and you're below average at quarterback. And I think that's what's going to trip them up. But I do think you know, LSU not on the schedule, Ole Miss not on the schedule, still got Alabama, still got Georgia, but it's a little bit of an easier schedule than what Auburn's accustomed to. Normally they play one of the toughest schedules in the country, in that they have to play, they used to have to play Alabama, Georgia, and LSU every year. They're the only team in the country that had that distinction. So it did ease up a little bit. I think like 8-4 is plausible for Auburn, but you know, we know that Auburn's not a place that where they want to go 8-4. If you just wanted to go 8-4, you could have left Gus Malzahn as your coach, and you could have penciled in 8-4 pretty much every year. So, yeah, next couple years are huge for you.
I think it's interesting because I think I don't know how I'd bottom line your column is. Like, Hugh Freeze needs to keep the main thing the main thing.
That's
and
right.
That's what I actually worry about. When I saw him treat the Ole Miss game like a Super Bowl, I just remember thinking to myself, that is not what that fan base cares about. Like, I get it. I get why to him that game's personal, but that's not the standard for Auburn. And I to me, like, it's all kind of going back to the same thing. Like, the expectation for Auburn is, you know, maybe not beat Alabama and Georgia every year, but you beat them some years. Like, that's going to be the standard that you're judged against. And to me, that's kind of like that's kind of the crux of what you're saying.
That's right. And, you know, as I pointed out in the column, I mean, Kirby is 8-1 against Auburn. We all know how much the Iron Bowl means, but there's that other rivalry at Auburn, too, which I don't think is dropping off the schedule. You know, there's a reason why the SEC is doubling up on this 8-game schedule the next couple years and not having divisions. Keeps Georgia and Auburn on the schedule the next couple years, and by 2026, I think we're going to have a 9-game conference schedule, and I think Georgia is going to remain on Auburn's schedule in perpetuity. And that's Kirby's dominated them. Even more so than the Iron Bowl, that series in the last decade has been dominated by Georgia. And so, yeah, I mean, I think they're playing catch up on Georgia. Everybody is, but I think they're still playing catch up on Alabama. You know, when Saban retired, I wondered, like, is this going to be a power vacuum? Is a team like Auburn, LSU, someone going to be able to step in and fill this power vacuum? But Kalen DeBoer, we'll see how he does once the games start, but at least in the offseason, he stepped in and said, there's going to be no power vacuum here. I mean, Alabama, I mean, it's on a absolute recruiting heater with DeBoer. As good as Hugh Freeze has been recruiting, DeBoer's been doing it one step even better. So, yeah, I mean, like you said, keep the main thing the main thing. At some point, you're going to start getting judged on what's happening this season, not what was happening in games a decade ago. And the other thing with Hugh I wonder about, his play calling ability is very, very good. But I do wonder, in this era of college football, I think there is a reason why we don't hardly see any coaches calling plays anymore. The responsibilities have just become so much on a head coach that it's harder than ever to juggle play calling duties and being a de facto offensive coordinator on top of everything that you have on your plate as a head coach. Maybe Hugh Freeze can thread that needle, but it is pretty uncommon. And so, like, when that's your special skill, play calling, but it's harder than ever to be a head coach who is a play caller, that's tough. I mean, I think in the right scenario, Hugh Freeze would be an excellent coordinator. In the right scenario, if egos were able to be worked out right, I think Hugh could have worked for Nick.
I would say you have to have a head coach that isn't worried about Hugh stabbing him in the back, which he would.
Yeah, Hugh could have worked for Nick, right? And maybe a couple others, but that's not the situation we're in. You know, I'm not out on his tenure. I think it still kind of falls in that too soon to tell situation. I think his recruiting is very important, but he's got to get to that point too, right? I mean, we're in such a mode in college football where you don't get 5 seasons anymore to lay the groundwork on the recruiting trail, and then those first, second, and third recruiting classes pay dividends in year 5. Like, that's not the situation. And that's why I thought it was important that he assembled some of these transfer wide receivers. Like, you can't just sit back and wait for these recruiting classes to roll in. But I really think he needed a new quarterback.
I know maybe I'm just being misguided, but it's like, when you're coming into an important year and you decide, like, we're rolling with Peyton Thorne again, like, that just gives me pause.
Yeah, there was a reason they played three quarterbacks in the bowl game last year. Well, there's actually two reasons. One, bowl games don't really matter anymore unless they're part of the playoff. But two, they didn't know whether Peyton Thorne should be their quarterback going into next season. And they played three quarterbacks in that game. Their offense stunk in that bowl loss. And yet, now they've recycled Peyton Thorne back to the top of the heap. And that's kind of the way, it's unflattering, but that's kind of the way you have to describe Peyton Thorne. He's a recycled quarterback. He was Michigan State starter for a while. He recycled to Auburn. He's a guy, I think Peyton Thorne would be the perfect backup quarterback in, like, yesteryear. He's that veteran that's got a lot of experience. You don't hate the idea of him having to come in and play a couple quarters if your quarterback goes down, but to go wire to wire throughout a season with Peyton Thorne as your quarterback, I think that puts a ceiling on you. And I think there are certain areas of Auburn's roster that are ready to contend. I mean, there's always talent in the front seven at Auburn. There always is, and there is this year.
Auburn never has a problem looking the part. I've always thought, whenever I'd cover Auburn, it's like, God, they got some good-looking athletes.
Yeah, and that's particularly true on the front seven. I think that's probably what you're hitting on there.
Yeah.
Like, that's one of the things that can grab your attention immediately is when you get some guys on the defensive line that can disrupt plays and get to the passer, and you get some playmaking linebackers, that goes a long way in looking the part. And Auburn has always had that. Even in their down years, they have that. But it's been a minute since Auburn's had a quarterback who you felt could take over the game. And they don't have that this year. And again, I don't think they have the offensive line to even just be like, we're going to be, we're going to be so run oriented, we'll just run it down your throat. I mean, that doesn't work so well in today's college football anymore anyway, but to the extent that they could do it, I think they would need a more dominant offensive line than what they have. So I think, in sum, I think offense is still going to be a bit of a hamstringing issue for Auburn this year. But I do look for an improvement on the record of maybe a win or two. Seven or eight wins, I think, is in play for Auburn.
All right, I wanted to run some things by you. So I feel like whenever we get to August, because I loved the other thing you wrote today, like, all right, let's actually talk about some games. Like, I feel like August for me is questioning like the things that I developed over the summer.
Mm-hmm.
All right, here we go. I've talked myself into Arkansas might not be that bad. I'm not talking 9-10 wins, but like, you tell me, like, I don't have a problem getting to them being like, they could be 7-5 and you could feel a little better.
And I know somebody's got to lose these games,
right?
But I've done the same thing with Arkansas as I've done with Florida. Like, I want to say Florida can go 7-5 or 8-4, and then I look at the schedule and I'm like, no, they can't. When I look at those programs, what they have on the roster, I think the perception is that they're going to be bottom-dwelling SEC teams. Arkansas and Florida are kind of lumped in the conversation with, like, Mississippi State.
Bingo.
When it comes to, like, how many games they're going to win.
Yeah, I think there's this thought that they're like Mississippi State or Vandy, and I'm like, guys, they're not that bad.
No, and again, with Florida, the schedule is going to come into play, so maybe their record at the end of the year does look sort of similar to Mississippi State, but I think they have a lot better team than Mississippi State. And I think Arkansas does too. So, yeah, you're kind of in a tough spot because, like I said, someone's got to lose, but I do think Arkansas and Florida are on a little bit of a higher tier than Mississippi State, Vanderbilt. I would put South Carolina on that list too. I don't quite understand. There seems to be a perception of South Carolina that, like, they're different from Mississippi State, and I don't think they are. The last few years, South Carolina was the Spencer Rattler show, and now Rattler's not there, and I'm not sure they're really any better in any other areas. So I think that the team is going to be worse when you subtract Spencer Rattler and don't add much else. So
I got a theory on that. You ready?
Yeah.
Shane takes media phone calls.
That could be. He's got an interesting relationship with the media because he can be combative sometimes with certain guys who can forget the Dennis Dodd dust up on Twitter. But, yeah, I mean, he's also positioned himself with other guys, I think, as being media-friendly, whereas, I mean, Jeff Levy, I doubt, is a big talker.
In fairness, I'm not sure. If I were advising Jeff Levy, I don't know if I'd tell him to be media-friendly. I don't know if you want the peek behind the curtain.
Fair point. But, yeah, that you might be onto something there with Beamer, like, because when I look at it, when I look at the depth chart situation, like, I put South Carolina closer to Mississippi State than I do to Florida. I think Florida is on a higher plane. I put Florida closer to, like, the Kentucky depth chart. Like, I think that's an important swing game for Florida as they, you know, try to get to respectability is beat Kentucky. You know, that's a game that they've lost 3 years in a row. That's a game that's in play for them this year. But the perception is, I think, you know, that Kentucky is like more in the middle tier and Arkansas and Florida are in the bottom tier, whereas I don't really see it that way. I don't think there's a ton of difference between Arkansas and Florida and Kentucky.
All right, along those same lines, I've talked myself into Kentucky's going to get someone this year.
Kentucky's going to get someone. Okay, so who's the someone? Like, right. who's on the schedule that you think they can get? Because they're not getting Georgia. I don't think they're getting Tennessee.
My rule is death taxes, and Tennessee will beat Kentucky. I don't care. You and I have seen that game so many times where Kentucky's had the better team and it didn't matter.
So who do you think they're going to get? Because if I'm going to buy into this, I got to.
All right, so I've talked myself into either Ole Miss.
Maybe.
Hang with me here. Texas. You're not going to have your starting two running backs. And I think we've done this move, and I know you and I talked about it last week because I've been citing you, but I've used your point. You are 100% right. The reason why we are blindly trusting Texas when we haven't before is because of what we saw in Tuscaloosa. Like sometimes like we are just dumb people, and you're 100% right, and I've cited that. But I've talked myself into like, you know, they go to Michigan. Michigan's going to make that a freaking fight. I'm not sure they're super ready for that. And then you kind of have this stretch of Oklahoma, Georgia. Like, there's a scenario where it just doesn't go well, and, like, somebody snaps them up, and by the end of the season, like, they're not playing for anything. And like, you could talk me into Kentucky pops Texas, like, the second to last week of the year.
It's just so hard for me to buy into the Kentucky narrative because I've seen this we've almost seen it play out so many times. Like, in the old schedule format, Stoops would sprint out to some 6-0 record that's fueled by a bunch of wins over MAC opponents, and then they inexplicably have this like mind control over Florida, you know, during the Stoops era, and so they sprint out to 6-0, and then they just soil their britches the rest of the way, and it's like I've seen this too many times to buy into it. But I think, you know, if you take history out of it and just look at kind of the argument you're making in present day, I could buy that Kentucky gets one of those two. Where are they at? Are those in Lexington?
The Ole Miss game is in Oxford. The Texas, they're both on the road. The Ole Miss game's the 11 a.m. game. I mean, the last time they were in Oxford, they were a false start away from winning.
That's right. I think Ole Miss is the more gettable one there, interestingly enough. Texas on the road, Texas might be playing for its playoff life at that point.
They got A&M the next week, though.
Yeah, they do have A&M the next week, but they could be in win-or-go-home mode at that point for the play. They could be saddled with two losses by that point, depending on how that Michigan game goes. So I don't think you're going to fall to trap game if you're in playoff and elimination mode at that one. So I would say of the two, I would think Ole Miss is more gettable. But that might be because of history in mind, too, of how close Kentucky was to getting Ole Miss and Oxford. Probably should have got, in some ways, probably should have gotten Ole Miss and Oxford 2 years ago. Ole Miss kind of performed an escape act on that particular day in Oxford.
All right, the other ones that I was thinking about this week, I am very curious in this 12-team playoff era, if we're going to start to have some NFL leak into college football, and what I mean by that is I don't think you're ever going to convince college coaches to take the foot off the gas. I think they're just wired that way. But I just know, I know how human beings think. And if you know it's not really do or die, like, are we going to start to see some, like, head-scratching losses where a team has already built up enough of a resume? And, like, to me, the perfect example is, like, all right, what if Georgia gets to Oxford? And
from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
America's favorite place to watch football is Stadium Swim, located at Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas. Catch all the biggest games at a viewing experience built for sports fans. Chill in one of their 6 pools on 3 different levels for a perfect view of their massive screen. Plenty of seating options from cozy daybeds to private, temperature-controlled cabanas. Stadium Swim. Book your spot today at CircaLasVegas.com.
For those in recovery, support from friends and family often leads to better outcomes. Here's to those who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. Visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose for information about treatment options and how to support those experiencing addiction.
It's not just about watching the game, it's about betting on it. I'm Mike Valeni, and on Cash the Ticket, Jim Costa and I break down every college football and NFL matchup like it's the last game we're ever going to watch, from the best bets to the sneaky underdogs, and of course, as my co-host likes to say, the value. And the one thing we're not going to do is pretend we're professionals. We have fun with it, it's an entertainment product, and it makes watching games a hell of a lot of fun. So Cash the Ticket, follow it in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.